I watched as Murphy got her gear into place. Charity helped her secure the armor. Her mail was a short-sleeved shirt, maybe one of Charity's spare suits. She'd compensated for the oversized armor by belting it in tight, but the short sleeves fell to her elbows, and the hem reached most of the way to her knees. Murphy looked like a kid dressing up in an adult's clothes. Her expression grew calm and distant as she worked, the way it did when she was focused on shooting or in the middle of one of her 5,000,000,003 formal katas. I closed my eyes and tentatively pushed my magical senses toward her. I could feel the energy in her, the life pulsing and steady. There were tremors in it, here and there, but there was no screaming beacon of violent terror that would trumpet our approach to the bad guys. Not that I thought there would be. What she lacked in height, she more than made up for in guts. On the other hand, Murphy had never been in the Never Never, and even though Ferry was as normal a place as you can find there, it could get pretty weird. Despite training, discipline, and determination, novice deep-water divers can never be sure that they will remain free from the onset of the condition called pressure sickness. The Never Never was much the same. You can't tell how someone is going to react the first time they fall down the rabbit hole. Thomas, being Thomas, made the mail into a fashion statement. He wore black clothing, black combat boots, and the arming jacket and mail somehow managed to go with the rest of his wardrobe. He had his saber on his belt on his left side, carried the shotgun in his right hand, and made the whole ensemble look like an upper-class version of the Road Warrior. I checked on Thomas with my wizard senses, too. His presence had never been fully human, but like the other members of the White Court, the vampiric aspects of him were not obvious to casual observation, not even to wizards. There was something feline about his aura, the same quality I would expect in a hungry leopard waiting patiently for the next meal to approach. Enormous power held in perfect balance. There was a darker portion of him, too, the part I'd always associated with the demonic presence that made him a vampire, a black and bitter well of energy, equal parts lust, hunger, and self-loathing. Thomas was no fool. He was certainly afraid, but the fear couldn't be sensed under that still, black surface. Charity, after she finished helping Murphy, stepped back from her and went to her knees in the parking lot. She folded her hands in her lap, bowed her head, and continued praying. Around her, I felt a kind of ambient warmth, as though she knelt in her own personal sunbeam, the same kind of energy that had always characterized her husband's presence. Faith, I suppose. She was afraid, too, but it wasn't the primitive survival fear the fetches required. Her fear was for her daughter, for her safety, her future, her happiness. And as I watched her, I saw her lips form my name, then Thomas's, then Murphy's. Charity was more afraid for us than herself. Right there, I promised myself that I would get her back home with her daughter, back to her family and her husband, safe and sound and whole. I would not, by God, hesitate for a heartbeat to do whatever was necessary to make my friend's family whole again.